That Metal Interview.
Welcome one more time. Thank you guys for your support. Thank you for streaming. Thank you for downloading, sharing, subscribing to our YouTube channel. Thank you guys. That Metal Interview podcast, in which we interview rock stars and metal stars and all kinds of death metal stars. So thank you guys for your support one more time. On behalf of myself and my staff here, myself, James. Anyway, so we have a very special guest here. The legendary Steve Grimmett of the band, Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper. That is the name he is using right now. For some reason or another, he can't use Grim Reaper by itself, right? So he'll talk about it. So Steve Grimmett, formerly of Grim Reaper, and of course he had a band called Onslaught and so on, some other projects. So we'll ask him about all these other projects. So right now I want to go back and reminisce and remember this song that I heard on Headbangers Ball moons ago, man, a long time ago. For those of you guys that remember Headbangers Ball back in the day, I heard this one song called Rock You to Hell, man, and by Grim Reaper, of course. And when I heard that, I was bought, man. I'm a Grim Reaper fan all the way, so here it is. Let's reminisce Grim Reaper. We'll be right back.
What's wrong with our society? Is it fear or apathy?
talk about a true classic, man. A true, true classic. See You in Hell, Rock You to Hell. A lot of hell in this band, so that's why it's badass to me. So there you go, Rock You to Hell, man. Mr. Steve Grimmett is our guest. And let's go directly into the interview. Here is Mr. Steve Grimmett. Enjoy.
I saw you in the band were playing your first gig since February of 2020. The Brew yeah. Before Christmas, that is. How did that feel after such a long time?
It was good. I got really nervous beforehand because I don't normally get nervous. I sort of move that into another place in my head, and you know, and it makes me go for it. But yeah, it was quite nerve wracking. And then because of COVID, I haven't worn my prosthetic leg for quite some time. And I started to, I got about 3-4 numbers in, and my back went into spasm. And it was the most horrific, painful thing I'd been through for a while. And so I had to sit down, and I couldn't stand up for the rest of the show. But still delivered, you know, we still had a good gig, people enjoyed themselves, and yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, I saw a couple of clips that people post, you know, it's very, very cool performance,
yeah,
you know.
It was a really great show. Really good show.
So you started, let's go back in time a bit. You started in the late 70s under Medusa.
Yeah.
How did you come up with Grim Reaper, the name? How did they went from Medusa to that?
While I was in Medusa, there was I want to say rival band, but we were never rivals. It was another band sort of around the area. Grim Reaper were already a band before I joined them. And basically, Medusa had started to crumble, and then I got a phone call from Nick Bocott, the guitarist from Grim Reaper, and he was drunk as a skunk, and he basically didn't say anything to me, and I thought, well, that's kind of weird that he would phone me up anyway. The next day, he'd sobered up and phoned me. He said, I'm sorry about that, chap. This is what I wanted to ask you, you know, would you join me? And basically that was it. Away we went.
Wow, just like that, huh?
Yeah, it was. So, it was literally just like that. We obviously wrote an album, and in between that time and releasing the album, we won a local radio station Battle of the Bands, and it gave us 24 hours in a 24 track studio.
Nice.
We did a demo in there, and then I had already worked with a band doing a single, and they got in touch with me and said, look, could you do our album for us, because we still haven't found a singer. And I was like, yeah, sure. So when I did that, I took the demo that we did from the Battle of the Bands and dropped it with the record label that I was doing this work for, and 6 weeks later we were signed, and then that really it started to take off from there.
Stay with us, we'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Nice, nice. At what point did you... You're a badass singer, by the way. Very, very awesome vocals there. Congrats.
Thank you.
How did you first know early on you could sing, you know?
Well, a girlfriend caught me singing in the bedroom when she came over to see me. Oh. And she says, you're really good, you know? And I'm like, yeah. What does that mean, sort of thing? Anyway, she'd got me a tryout for a local band, and I turned up and did the audition, got a job, and then our first show was in front of over here ABC. We had ABC cinemas, which were, you know, a movie house, and on a Saturday morning they had a thing called the Saturday Morning Miners, and it was full of kids. Yeah. And we did a show in there, and basically that was it. But that was the one and only show I ever did with them. And and then I started to get together with other musicians from where I was living, and that's where we created Medusa. And so that was it, really. That's how it all started. It was all purely by accident. For me, it was a pure accident. But there you go.
Wow. So coming back to 2019, last album you released was At the Gates. All rocking tunes, man. Badass. I love Venom. I dig Venom. I dig all of them, but
that's probably the band's favorite, to be quite honest with you. And it's about a guy who's very misguided about things, and you know, he's just basically poison to people around him and to himself. So that's what that's about. But it was a good album, actually, At the Gates. I mean, it was a lot of stuff going on about me losing my leg and that. And basically, you know, me came very close to dying. And so I was at the pearly gates, basically.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah, it was really close. Yeah, it was very, very close to me passing, you know, really passing. You know, it was, I spent 7 weeks in a hospital having parts of my leg removed in Ecuador.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you, you know, it was in Guayaquil and in Ecuador. And the staff were absolutely fantastic to me. The hospital was absolutely fantastic. But I was in there for quite some time, obviously. I had a hanging tree next to me, you know, where they hang all the stuff that they intravenously drip into you. There was blood on there. There was all sorts on there. And, I was pretty ill. But then things started to get slightly better. And I used to have fans coming in all hours of the day. They would come in like 4 to 6 people at a time, you know. And that was great. That was fantastic. But then the security of the hospital thought, hang on a second, this can't be happening. So they stopped it from happening, which is a real shame. It was a real shame because I had no entertainment at all in the hospital.
Yeah,
I had half an hour of decent internet per day, of which half of it I spent talking to my family in rotation, and also then planning my route back, you know, finding out about prosthetic legs and da-da-da-da, driving, because that was something I had to redo. So I was literally driving a car in my bed, you know, with the left foot. So it's, you know, I can't drive a stick anymore. I have to drive an auto. So it's like, right, okay, I've got to get used to the fact that my left leg is now my leading leg. So, yeah, I've done all that. And, basically, my wife joined me. Whew, I don't know. I basically had my leg taken because they took that in three parts. They did. I had 5 operations while I was in there. One on my foot to see if they could get rid of the problem. That went bad, and they cut me below knee. That after about 6 days went bad. I got necrosis in the cut, which is a flesh-eating disease. So they had to take me above knee, where the blood flow was better, and that was that. There are 2 operations after that because they fitted a drain in it, and I had to have that all cleaned. But yeah, I had 3 of the operations. The first 3 were all under. I had epidural, so I couldn't feel a thing, but I could hear them sawing through my bones, cutting my leg off. So it was that basically pushed me into now having PTSD. So which I'm having to deal with. So lots of crap, you know, that came with it. Obviously, losing my leg was the first one, but you know, in the long term, I've now got PTSD, and I'm having to deal with that. That's like a post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, like the soldiers and stuff get when they have their legs blown off in Afghanistan and all that shit, you know. Yeah. It's not pleasant, I've got to say. It's not pleasant. It's okay for me, but it's everybody around me. You know, they can come in for, you know, I may drop into it and bang, I come out with just inane shit. So everybody around me has like been told, look, I could do this, I could do that. So, yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
we're just glad you came out of it and you're doing better, you know, as fans, you know, as fans, you know.
Yeah, I am, definitely. And, you know, during the COVID lockdowns that we had in this country, you know, I couldn't get out, didn't go out, and it was a pain in the ass, and it still is to some certain degree. And you tend to go into yourself, and that's where I was. And then doing this show in London at the weekend was just a massive release to get out there and go and do it, you know. So my wife and I are going to be sorting out tours and stuff next. I'm going to South America in March, April time. And then after that, we'll be planning the US tour now to coincide with me getting back from South America. So it'll be sort of like maybe August time. So
awesome. We're looking forward to that. So is there something new brewing? Are you guys going to tour at the gates? You're going to finish that off, or are you guys doing something?
Yes, I will do that. But I'm actually writing a new album as we speak, and it'll be because my guys don't want to tour for very long, you know.
Yeah.
three to four weeks, that's what they want to do. Well, that's no good to me. So I'm going to be using, I don't know if you've heard of the band Three Tremors.
Yeah.
I did a spot for them in Europe.
Nice.
And the musicians out of that, the drummer, the bass player and the guitarist, they're the guys I'm writing a new album with, and I'm going to be touring with those guys. So they're all American guys. They're great, great musicians.
Nice.
So we're actually banging in an album as we speak too. So
brilliant. Yeah. Oh wow. Okay. So let's go back in time a bit. I first heard of Grim Reaper about 1988. See You in Hell, and I was I was a fan since then. You know, and then Rock You to Hell. Awesome stuff too. The whole CD, yep. Cassette actually. Worldwide recognition for you guys, man. How was that experience for you? How did MTV change Grim Reaper?
Well, I did. It changed it because it changed the whole face of rock, really.
Yeah.
Because they put our video on, and they were only ever going to play it once.
Yeah.
And they put it on, and they put a questionnaire after it. Do you want to see more of this stuff? And they got absolutely inundated with the word yes. And basically, they then decided to put us on maximum rotation, which was 7 days a week, 7 times a day for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And it was just like, bang. And that was our introduction to the States, really. Oh. I mean, it got out there. The album See You in Hell got out there under import. Because our label, well, it was imported anyway, and it got to a store in New York called Zigzag Records, and they got hold of the album, played it, and then got in touch with a guy called Walter O'Brien, who eventually became our manager, and they he got in touch with Ebony Records, our label, and they said, no, we want a major label.
Yeah.
And so he said, right, okay, because Walter had Combat Records. And he then took it to Wendy Goldstein at RCA. And again, there you go. It was just like everything sort of sewed itself together. And it was, you know, all the planets aligned. And bang, away we went.
Wow. Yes, I remember clearly. I went to buy the cassette right away. I got the...
Yeah.
Got Rock You to Hell first, and then See You in Hell. Backwards.
Yeah.
Well, anyways. Anyway, so what drives you every day to keep going, you know? Pick up a mic, record, tour. What's your inspiration here?
it's my fans. It's without doubt the fans, you know. I had a few comments from this weekend that we've just done. Somebody said, why is Steve sitting down? And some guy came back and said, because he's overweight and he's only got one leg. Mm-hmm. I mean, what an asshole. This guy doesn't know me from Jack. And
yeah.
For them to say that, he has no idea what I have done and why I do it. Wow. It's for the fans, you know, and that's all I kept thinking about when I was in hospital, was when can I get my prosthetic so I can get back up on stage, and because I don't want to let my fans down, and I really seriously mean that. And you know, we did a thing in the States called the 70,000 Tons of Metal, which is the boat cruise, and my guitarist said, you know what, he said, I realize what you mean now with all these things you say. You were standing in front of the crowd with your arms open and they were smiling at you and you were smiling back, and that is what it all means to me. It's all about the fans, and every show we do I get toweled down, you know, dry myself off and then go out and meet the fans to take pictures, sign stuff and all that, because that's really important to me, because without my fans we wouldn't be there doing it. It's as simple as that.
Exactly. Understood.
And that's what drives me.
Wow. Understood. What advice can you give to new bands, you know, up-and-coming new bands, kids, if you will?
always listen to somebody that knows what they're talking about, you know, because even if you're signing a simple contract, there may be stuff in there that is detrimental to your career and how you make money and all the rest of it. So always have your contract read by a professional lawyer who knows the music industry. Do you have a in the UK we have a thing called Musicians Union, which you join and you get all those things for free. I don't know if you have anything like that in the States, but if you do, join it, because it's worth every penny. And basically they look at all my contracts and say, yes, this is good, it's okay, and then sign it, you know. So that's the first one, is get a good lawyer and get that sort of, and the next thing is to join a union, you know. And I know that the States is full of unions, and they are good for you in a way, especially a musician's union. So, you know, do that. And never be an arsehole.
Yeah.
You just don't need to be an arsehole. There still are people out there doing that, you know. It's like, yeah, okay.
Always.
You get your own back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So,
there's no need for it.
Right. Yeah, there's all kinds of people out there. So, can you give us fans an update on Onslaught or the Sanity Days?
Well, Onslaught, I won't ever work with them again. The band's changed anyway, so much so that their singer left, and I'm not sure whether it's in the toilet or not, but it could be. But the Sanity Days, I'm still talking to all of the guys. The biggest problem that we have with that band is the Al, the guitarist. He got bladder cancer.
Oh, okay.
And it really screwed him up. He hasn't picked up a guitar in probably 4 years. And we just don't want to do it with anybody else, if you know what I mean. I don't know whether that's gone to bed or not, to be quite honest with you. I haven't spoken to Al for a while now, and I should do. And now you've prompted me, now you've asked me, I will call him before Christmas. But yeah, it basically that's it. But I've been, apart from the COVID thing, I've been too busy with the Grim Reaper thing. You know, it's for us, it's like album tour.
Awesome.
And I'm going to keep doing that until I can't tour anymore, basically, because, you know, at some point, it's getting harder every time I go out for me physically. And I would like to keep doing it for at least sort of like another 5 years, at least. That's really what I want to do, because I love it. And Grim Reaper is the band that take me or give me the opportunity to do that.
Would you like to send a message to your fans listening to this podcast?
Yes. Yes, please. Yeah. You know, obviously, guys, that you know, COVID's been a pain in the arse this year, so we've not been able to come out and see you. In fact, I had to cancel a tour, which is something that I never ever liked doing. So, you know, look out for us in 2022. We are coming back to see you. So, horns up, and thank you for your continued support, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for your time, and we're looking forward to the new Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper album. And for now, it's awesome. we got to enjoy the latest one, At the Gates.
Yes. Okay. Cool. You take care.
Much respect to Mr. Grimmett. Thank you, sir, for obliging us, and thank you for being a part of our show. Thank you for being a member, an official member of That Metal Interview guest list. So thank you, sir, and keep rocking with Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper. Keep rocking with Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper. Keep bringing the badass rock that you always do, and know that you have fans around the world supporting you. No matter how you feel, always remember that you have a lot of fans. You have thousands and millions of fans around the world. So we wait for Steve Grimmett and Grim Reaper to show up here in the U.S., man. So, of course, people around the world await Steve Grimmett's Grim Reaper, of course. So on behalf of myself, James, thank you, guys. Don't forget to subscribe and support Mr. Grimmett's social medias and their merchandise tables, if you will. So don't forget to keep it metal.